Okay. Well, good evening. It's 5:30 p.m., so we will get started on time. Welcome to tonight's meeting on Monday, the 5th of May, 2025. Welcome to our member of the community in the public gallery, and also to those who are watching along at home on YouTube. Being 5:30 p.m, I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with Council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Yes.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reek, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Midgley, and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr. Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, the Acting Director, Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Dr. Stevenson, our new Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Mackey. Welcome to your first meeting on your very first day here at Council. Acting Director, Environment, Community and Development Services, Ms. Quinn. Our Manager of Information Services, Mr. Tenaglia. Our Communications Lead, Ms. Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. We have two apologies this evening, one from Councillor Fox and the other one from Councillor Richardson. Takes us to page one, confirmation of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 6, held on the 7th of April 2025, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Thank you. Still on page one, workshops held since the last Council meeting. We had a workshop on the 28th of April in relation to workplace health and safety and psychosafety due diligence training. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No, thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Would you like to ask a question? Thank you. You know the drill. Your name and suburb, please, before asking your question.
Mark Dunallan from Huntingfield. Today I had the pleasure of using the new bus stops to get to work this morning, and I parked my bike on the bike rack. I recall at a previous Kingborough Bicycle Advisory Committee meeting that we identified that the bike racks at the new stop are too close to the adjacent fence to park a bike correctly on the bike rack, in that you can't wheel your bike forward into the bike rack because there's no space on the other side of the bike rack. Has that been reviewed, and is it still intended to be adjusted?
We all turn around and look at our new Director of Engineering, who then avoided eye contact with me. CEO.
Yeah, thank you. Through you, Mayor. We'll have to take that question on notice.
Sure.
Thank you. Questions on notice from the public. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public, but if anyone does want to submit one, they can do so by filling in the relevant form on our website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Takes us still on page two to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question? I've got Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I have two questions. The first is regarding Whittons Road in Kettering. So a resident has contacted me to express concern that of the condition of the road, and that she was told allegedly by staff that it's only graded every 10 years, and she and the residents have become quite upset about it. And she also mentioned that some potholing fixes that were done on Thursday last week are already starting to deteriorate. So she also complains about hazardous branches that are dead on trees overhanging part of the road. That's causing concern. She seems frustrated that, according to her, she's not getting anywhere with council to try and get the road looked at more extensively. Could I have a comment back from the relevant officer as to how often that road is graded? Is it once every 10 years? And could we maybe give a commitment to have it inspected because of the concerns and the, from what I can hear from her, the uprising from her and her neighbours?
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. I believe the CEO can help us with that one.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Thanks for the question. I think some of the confusion here may be a little bit around miscommunication. So there's no fixed time frame around the regrading of roads. That's done on an inspection basis and done as needed, as per the road surface requirement. It might have been being confused with resheeting, which is a more extensive rebuild of the road surface in that element. The team have been back out to the site today to have a re-inspection of that road to have a look at, any concerns. So the pothole remediation that was done on the 1st of May is looking pretty good. There's no signs of degradation to that. Whilst the team noted that there was some gravel that accumulated in places, that there wasn't anything that would reach our standard for any remedial action at the moment. So the feedback from the inspection today is certainly that the road is in adequate condition.
Mm. And what about the allegation about the rutting? Have we got an opinion on that?
So there was some minor corrugation noted at one area of the road, but it wasn't anything that would currently require remedial treatment.
Thank you, CEO. I'll pass on that feedback to the resident, and there was actually some other questions in there that I passed on to you, and I'll let you get back to me on those because they're staff names related as well. Thank you for that. My second question, while maybe a little bit humorous to some of us, has to do with a phone call I received just before the meeting today where the individual has asked me to ask a question. He has found a five-year-old sheep on his property down at Margate and is at wit's end to try and get rid of it and is nowhere. And the question he had that he wanted me to ask council was, if said sheep was found in Drew Point, what would council do about it? Would council take it away? That was the question I was asked to ask.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, council's powers with respect to empowerment of animals relate to livestock on public roads and livestock on council land. So Drew Point is council land, so we would need to respond if it was found at Drew Point on our land. The matter of empowerment of animals on private land is complicated, and it's not an area that council has either jurisdiction or the resources to provide a response when the animal is on private land.
Okay, thank you. So we have the capacity as a council to get rid of said animal or a animal like that if it was on our property?
Through you, Mayor, I won't say we've got the capacity. We have a requirement under legislation to deal with an animal on council land. Depending on what the animal is, will depend on our capacity to respond.
Okay, thank you for answering that question, and I've made that commitment now and have asked it on behalf of the resident.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Three questions relating to housing. The first one is around housing supply. In 2019, there was an opinion piece that was published in the Mercury by a local resident, Peter Alexis, and it proposed that local councils should consider directly entering the housing market to build homes for Tasmanians in need. Now, that practice isn't widespread, is the best of my understanding, and the reason for that is essentially because it's kind of not business as usual for council to be investing in housing stock. There's potentially a preference to deploy voluntary planning incentives that can encourage affordable housing rather than actually leaning into the market. But it piqued my interest because over the past 2 decades, residential property in Kingborough has delivered very strong capital growth for private investors. For example, in Blackmans Bay, the median house price has increased by 8.26% over the past 12 months alone. So, in contrast, during this period over the last several decades, Kingborough Council has actually sold off residential property and land that it owned rather than retaining or acquiring property for development. So, given that Council already has internal capacity for project management and construction works, has any financial analysis actually been undertaken to explore the potential for Council to lean in to the market? Has any financial analysis been done by the Council on whether it would benefit from developing, owning and renting housing stock, not just in order to improve housing supply in Kingborough, but also to strengthen Council's financial position?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'll ask the CEO to address that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, and through you, Mayor. So, Council has done some work in the past around housing, and you know, in particular, around the development of the Kingston Park area. However, Council hasn't, to my knowledge, seriously thought about developing, owning, and utilising affordable housing to the community.
Thank you. I note that obviously for residential housing developers in the municipality, some of them would have done quite well over the past several decades. So at the same time that there's been a diminution in council's ownership of residential land, at the same time there have been investors who have been strengthening their financial position while we've been decreasing ours. My second question is around housing strategy. The Central Coast Council is currently preparing a new housing strategy called Our Homes, Our Future. What lessons can be learnt by Kingborough from what's happening in the Central Coast, and will Kingborough be developing its own housing strategy?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Kingborough doesn't have a plan at this stage to develop a housing strategy. I do note that there are some other councils that have developed strategic documents of that sort. The majority of them do focus around influence and advocacy relating to housing supply, and that's something that Kingborough Council has made statements about in the past, that we will work within that sort of realm, and that's something that we will continue to do within the constraints and resources that we have. I would also note that Homes Tasmania is a Tasmanian-wide governmental agency who is tasked with delivering outcomes in that space, and if Council was to proceed down that path, we would need to be cautious in our approach and making sure we weren't duplicating the work of another statewide agency.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor. My next question is around housing, our Kingborough Council housing statement. So on the 19th of June in 2023, to some fanfare, Kingborough Council passed a statement on housing. And the reason I say fanfare is because we also issued a media release that's still up online on our website with the big headline, Housing Commitment. So the minutes from that 19th of June 2023 Council meeting clearly state that the General Manager will work with an internal working group and will add items to the action plan. So my question on the housing statement is, which actions from that action plan have been completed? That's my first question.
I suspect we might need to take that on notice, but I'll check with the CEO.
We would need to take that detail on notice, Kurt.
Sure thing. Thank you. And through you, Mayor, the second question on the housing statement is, will the action plan from our housing statement be published on the Kingborough Council website?
CEO.
I would need to take that also on notice. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice from councillors? Okay, continuing.
Sorry,
on.
Mayor, I've just got a question in closed session.
Question in closed. Thank you. I'll make a note of that. Thank you very much. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors. It takes us to petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. And at the time that the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. We're now on page 3, officers' reports to council. Proposed new road name, Little Beach View, Dens Point, with a recommendation on page 6. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in the deputy mayor and a seconder. Deputy mayor, and it's got off.
Yes, so new road has been approved under a planning permit on Bruny Island, and it does not yet have a name. Little Beach View was proposed by the developer after a few different suggestions. This new name, Little Beach View, is in accordance with the Place Names Act. It seems appropriate, and I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you. Any further discussion? If not, I will put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Gladright and seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 10, Kingborough Integrated Transport Strategy, with a recommendation on page 12. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So, yes, this integrated transport strategy has come back to us again for Council to discuss and approve following community consultation. We have had, sorry, I forget the number now, was it 7 or 11? There was a few people, maybe 7 or 11? 11?
11.
Sorry.
11.
I had those numbers in my brain. 11 people did provide some comment to that, some a bit more detailed than the others. Overall, from that community discussion, which I admit was a bit of a low number, but, you know, not everybody wants to read such a long report. There was some very positive for it, a few kind of comments around extra details there, but basically this integrated transport strategy, from how I see it, and as named up in the strategy, it provides a document and guidance for us to look at our all modes of transport across Kingborough. It looks at the safety, efficiency and accessible transport system that supports all travel modes. During the consultation as well, different council groups have been involved and different stakeholders from other council areas have also had a look at this strategy. As I said, it gives great guidance for transport planning in Kingborough. Even though the strategy kind of highlighted there wasn't really that much change, if you've lived here for 20 years, you can actually see that there has been a real impact on the travel modes, especially in the car modes, and then that kind of impacts on the people's accessibility and safety to, say, cycle or walk, because, you know, that impacts then. For example, I used to ride on Channel Highway when I first moved here 25 years ago, cycle into Hobart nearly every day. For now, I think about actually my personal safety as to whether I'm going to ride on the Channel Highway. I don't know if that's it's more than an age thing. It's actually, we know that there's a lot of cars there, and so therefore we need to have these plans in place and thinking in place to look at, you know, how we're going to make that change for the future. And also we know with our bus modes as well that we've got different solutions. They're not all great. People are still not happy with a lot of the bus modes, so this transport strategy provides advocacy and voice in that. So when we're going to government to have these conversations, we've got a very big detail of background and information that we can work towards to create some action on, and then work towards, I guess, to apply for funding and grants and all that kind of thing as well. So it provides that document. I thought that there were some good key highlights that are important to remember when we're thinking about our land and our planning for the future, where we're developing housing, that it highlights, you know, ensuring that we have access to all transport modes when we're considering our, you know, developing down regionally and things like that, that when we're looking at our looking at connectivity to public transport, that we're also considering alternative modes of connectivity to the public transport hubs, which is important. And also that it aligns, the changes in this strategy have aligned to the tracks and trails strategy, the cycling plan and footpath strategy as well. I thought some of the comments that Cycling South highlighted were really good, and I just note that in sometimes when we've come back with community feedback, we've sort of had a bit of a column to say these are some of the comments and this is kind of where it's changed in the strategy, but I'm just wondering where perhaps with some of the community feedback, where were kind of the changes actually in the strategy? Were they significant? Seems like they were just a bit minor, but was anything at all just to highlight?
I'm not sure if who can assist us with that today.
Sorry, I should have put these
forward. Just me.
Through you, Mayor, no, only very minor changes have been made.
Thank you, that's what I thought as well. And just noting, towards the end of the strategy, there is a number of KPIs, and I think there was a couple of mentions in the community feedback that it actually was a really long strategy, mm-hmm. and the KPIs are long, and when this first came to council, I really saw, you know, in particular, say, kids walking to school or cycling to school and increasing that. Like, some council areas have dedicated staff members actually looking at active transport and noting that we do not have the resources for that. So I think that there's probably a high number of KPIs. They're great to kind of worry as to how we're going to achieve them. I note that in the strategy it says that they'll be reviewed annually, and I'm just wondering how, I guess that's an internal thing versus coming back to council, but how do we keep this kind of at the forefront in some of these areas, or how do we say if we want to develop a encouraging more kids to walk to school or cycle to school, like, how does that happen when we don't really have the resources and it's mentioned as a KPI?
Mr. Smee, who looks surprised by me asking him to answer that question. Mr. Stewart.
Look, through you, Mayor, sort of the evaluation of these sort of KPIs of these documents is really important to make sure that we're holding ourselves to account. Look, the internal resourcing that we have available to put into supporting the delivery of these is a constant challenge for us as an organisation, so we will need to look at the output of this strategic document and consider how we support our workforce to be able to deliver against it. In regard to the sort of the travel to and fro school, we're not going to be able to have the sort of resourcing that other councils have to be able to work into those sort of active transport routes specifically, but we will our overall response to how we think about transport planning, how we think about the transport infrastructure that we need to be developing through our capital works programs, and making sure that we're creating accessible environments for all modes of travel, which is the purpose of this strategy in the first place.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you for your response. That's good to know, and I hope that this sort of strategy, if like when there's a new council term, that new councillors are read these sort of documents, because they are really important strategic things to sit as a platform for the future kind of thinking. And yes, there's lots of great highlights about the strategy. It's important that we have it, and thanks to all involved.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Cordover after you.
Thank you, Mayor. I enjoyed reading it. I think I agree with Councillor Midgley. It's important to have this sort of documentation. There's always the tension in these documents as to how much is aspirational and how much should be specific. I tend to lean towards these documents being a little bit more action-focused and specific than maybe aspirational. An area that I'd like to get the CEO or relevant officers comment on is on whether or not the touch points around economic, I think it should be more focused around funding. And it talks about, obviously, that we have to work a lot with state government and metro to get some of these projects over the line. But given the recent election and that I can say Franklin is considered a bit of a marginal seat now. The competition's out, and we should be able to get some more attention from the feds. I'm wondering on whether or not the CEO believes that the funding, this strategy should have a little bit more about funding and advocacy in specifics, maybe some ideas or some strategy there that we should be following up on, or whether or not that is something that we should maintain a distance from in these sorts of documents and then tackle them down the line later. I just think that these sorts of expert panels that we pay good money to could come up with some good ideas that probably they should put in in these documents. That's sort of my view, but I'd love to hear your opinion.
The CEO.
Certainly, the through you, Mayor, certainly having a plan of the sort provides us a really good basis to be able to seek external investment, to be able to have a strategic document that we can talk to different funders about and to be able to leverage through grant funding applications in and of themselves is it's highly valuable having the strategy in of itself. I guess to your point around whether or not there should be sort of a funding plan included within it, I guess what you don't want to do with a document of the sort, in my opinion, is to limit your options. So if we did go down that pathway in the future, I would certainly want to keep it high level in terms of indicative areas that we could be looking for additional support and how we would look to fund these initiatives. Because at times, I do have concerns that when we adopt strategic documents of the sort, and as per Councillor Midgley's question beforehand, it does sometimes, build expectation that we're going to be able to deliver all of these things within certain time periods, and that's going to be a challenge if we can't external investment. So I guess that's a long way of saying I'm not sure that within the strategy is necessarily the place to talk about what our funding options are for it. There's other mechanisms for us to look at that. The existence of the strategy in of itself is a really useful tool to be able to unlock funding, and I think that we just need to be cautious about what's achievable within timeframes, but make sure that we still hold ourselves to account to be driving towards those outcomes that we're looking for.
Thank you. Councillor Antolli, anything further?
Yeah,
your microphone's gone off because they keep doing that tonight. It's wonderful.
I've got to get back into the habit. Thank you for your response, CEO, and I can't say I disagree with you. There's the tension between what is expected, what does the community expect from us in terms of how aspirational these documents become or are versus to how practical they should be, because then the community thinks, oh, there goes council again. They spent all this money on a strategy document, but nothing's ever going to come from it. I'm sort of playing the devil's advocate. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Where do we sort of bridge the tension on that one? Maybe you could explain even to the community what then do we do afterwards with these documents to then bridge that funding gap? What's typically the mechanism or the process we follow?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. So there's a number of opportunities that we have to be able to seek external funding. Certainly, obviously, like you outlined earlier, federal advocacy is a really great way for us to try and unlock, investment into our community. Certainly, at a state level, that exists as well. But then there's a number of organised funding schemes that are out there. And so making sure that we have the right information put together about our strategic approach, where we want to head as a municipality. And certainly, we need to have stretch within that to make sure that we are going to be achieving the very best possible outcomes that we can for our community. So a document like this creates the strategic framework. From there, it goes into to staff to start to look at how we prioritise workflows from it, what are the specific initiatives that we might look at as part of these, and then they form sort of larger capital work programs often, but sometimes operational work programs that then go through a process to understand what's within our means to be able to achieve, and then what else could we be putting forward to other funders to be able to bring external funding into the organisation to achieve them. So it's a long process, but these sort of documents are really important for that.
Thanks. I appreciate the response. That's great. And of course, I will support this strategy.
Thank you, Councillor Antolli. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions and then a short contribution. On page 14 of the report, which is page 28 of my agenda, there's reference made to smart traffic lights. To reduce congestion. And my question on those was where are they and how do they work and what advantages are we seeing from smart traffic lights?
Anyone? CEO.
I might need to come back to you on that question offline. My supposition is it's ones that sense traffic flows and things like that and respond, but I would need to check with our experts to be sure in that response.
Sure. No worries. Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Second question. A couple of submissions or representations from the public mentioned that where there are instances where buses on their return journey to the depot or to Hobart are empty, there's suggestions from the community, well, why aren't these buses getting full? And so one example was about Snug, I think, and then the other one was, I'll just quote them, it said, buses that drop students at Taroona High should become buses for the public on the way back to the depot going via the city. My question is really just where that is occurring. Do we know why that's occurring, and do we advocate with Metro and other transport services to, I guess, help them become more efficient?
Look, I think that's an operational matter for Metro and not one that I'm aware that we've engaged in any discussion about. I know that our officers do have regular catch-ups with staff from Metro. I don't know whether the CEO can add anything to that.
Through you, Mayor. I don't have a lot to add to that, to be honest. One of the challenges we have in a strategy like this is there's a number of players. Well, these things aren't all within direct council control to be able to manage. There's a lot of influencing and advocacy that is required for us to be able to achieve some of these outcomes. What I would say is that there's often different contractual arrangements between school bus services and the public bus services, and so they might be different operators. I can't answer your question directly, but there are some of the things that may factor into the equation.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Through you, Mayor, if I may, I'll just race through a contribution to the debate. Firstly, I just want to thank the author and the authoriser. It's a terrific body of work, and I think it will serve Kingborough very well. It's critically important to improve active transport and public transport, advocate and influence where we can and control what we can to help people get around our municipality and get to work and recreation outside of our municipality as well. So improving those networks is critical. At a high level, I wanted to approach the subject that conceptually, where I have observed in the media and talking to people in the community some hostility towards the focus on active transport and public transport, it, in my opinion or in my interpretation, it seems to be this perception that it's almost a zero-sum game, that when public policy experts, often kind of faceless technocrats, when we come up with these progressive ideas of focusing on active transport and public transport, it's done at the expense of a private vehicle ownership or at the expense of people driving their cars. And I just wanted to acknowledge that right now many families are doing it tough, and right now many families feel that when we're focusing on more bike lanes, we're doing that at the expense of, you know, the private vehicle. And the private vehicle represents something much greater than just getting from A to B. To a lot of families, it represents dignity and autonomy and self. It represents individual sovereignty. That having the freedom of private transport is important for people's health and well-being and their own dignity. And I wanted to acknowledge that at the same time as recognising why it is so important that we improve equity and inclusion and accessibility in our transport systems. So Kingborough, for example, has an ageing population. And for many people, as they age, they at some point will no longer be able to have complete transport independence because they will no longer be able to drive their own car. Similarly, young people are made vulnerable by their lack of transport independence. Young people, before they can get a driver's licence in a private vehicle, they rely on buses and on walking places and on e-scooters and other multimodal forms of transportation. So that's why it's critically important that at a public policy level we focus on improving accessibility and inclusion in those areas. But I did just want to mention that as it doesn't have to be either or. I think the way we need to frame this discussion in the community is when we are improving active and public transport options, we're not doing that at necessarily at the expense of the car. We're expanding the number of ways that you can move freely in our municipality. We're expanding the choice that people have so that people don't have to rely on and depend on their private vehicle. And we will see benefits in that from our economy when our shops and our areas are more people-friendly because people can get to them. That will help people stop, stick, stay and spend. It will improve our businesses. It will improve our economy. It will improve individual households' ability to make healthy choices that are easy choices, to walk to the park and play footy with the kids, to shop at the local shops that are nice areas. Those kind of before we restrict, we also need to make sure that we built the proper infrastructure and advocated for the proper frequency and reliability of public transport. And I think by doing those things, by building first before we restrict, by improving public transport frequency and reliability before we start making car-free zones, that is what will help the community come along with us on this journey rather than it feeling like a top-down approach where people are banning cars. So that's just at a conceptual kind of high level, this tension that I think is real and that does exist, and I think we just need to be honest about it, that as people feel that economically we already have all these constraints on us, it's getting harder to just hop in the car and go for a drive because of the cost of keeping a car and maintenance and fuel. At the same time, you feel these public policy people telling us, well, we don't want you to be driving cars anyway because we want to reduce congestion and we want to improve climate outcomes and we want to do all these things. That's a tension that exists, and we just have to be honest about it and try and bring the community along with us on this public transport and active transport journey. Thanks for listening to my TED Talk. Cheers.
Thank you very much, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with the other councillors. I think it's an excellent strategy and I'll definitely be supporting it. Just thought it was worthwhile touching on a few of the actions listed in there, which I think are really valid. And it covers everything from active transport to our roads to our advocacy. So, for example, we talk about advocating for improvements to state roads, such as the Leslie Road, Huon Hallway Junction upgrade, which is something the community has been telling us for a long time. So I think the more we can advocate for that, the better. Then with council's roads, enhancing council road networks, such as the Gormley Drive upgrade and Spring Farm to Kingston View Drive connector, which, again, the community has been telling us about, which hopefully will be addressed through the AFL High Performance Centre project. Increased active transport with investment in networks. I think this is a key one. And the report tells us that the key active transport is also the connection from households to public transport, to workplaces, to schools. So I think even it's not just getting from one place to the other, it's getting from your house to your public transport so you can get to where you want to be. So it'd be great to focus on that. And then the final one is the greater collaboration with service providers. And as other councillors have already said, I think the more we can be talking to the state growth and metros of the world and talking on behalf of our community, the better. As we've seen from the feedback on this report, I think 3 or 4 or 5 were to do with metro services. So I guess it's taking the information that we're being told and making sure the message is getting through to the metros of the world on behalf of our community. So excellent report, and I fully support it.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Further contributions? I just wanted to just the authors of the report and also the 11 representatives of the community that we received responses from. As has been touched on, I thought it was interesting that that a number of those responses from the community highlighted the deficiencies in some of the current bus timetables, and I think particularly since the temporary service adjustments that had been put in place, which 2 years later is still going. I'm a regular bus user and I know the impact that those have had, where it's much more difficult now to get a bus at a time when you need it. And I have to say, so far my interactions with the supposedly live timetabling of buses haven't been great and haven't actually aligned with when the bus arrives. So that is disappointing because I know a lot of money was put into that by the state government. But I want to assure those members of the community, and particularly the ones in the channel who have commented about the snug bus issues, that is obviously one of the issues that, as Councillor Bain has mentioned, we will be fierce advocates for the community. As stated earlier, we do have the CEO has regular meetings with Metro, and we can put it to them, but also put it to the passenger transport section of Department of State Growth so that they're aware of some of the concerns that are flowing through to our communities based on the contracts that they then put in place with the bus providers such as Metro, because there is a flow-on effect for people in the community who don't have access to their own transport when they can't get public transport when they need it, particularly if it's to get to medical appointments and so on. So there is certainly a lot of work to do in this space. I share the, I guess, the concerns that Councillor Antoli articulated about, you know, how do we get the funding for some of these projects. As Greater Hobart Mayors, we are constantly at state and federal elections seeking funding from those levels of government to increase the pool of funding available for active transport projects around the southern region. Unfortunately, we haven't had a huge amount of success to date, and we certainly did in the last federal election ask for substantial funding to be put into this area, and particularly as part of that, we would have liked to have seen as a council work done on the bike lane, or not the bike lane, but the multi-use path from Huntingfield to Margate, which we know would be an absolute benefit to people in that area. So we will continue to push those projects along with others, and hope that we can in the future be seeing a range of options for people to move around the community and in and out of this community, because it is important, and there are different modes of travel that people opt for. But one thing we do know, and I think Councillor Midgley has highlighted it well, is that for cyclists in particular, there are, given the number of cars on our roads these days, it can be very intimidating to be a cyclist, and to if we can increase the separation of cars and bikes, then that is certainly something that would be a positive and hopefully convert some people who are on the fence about cycling, even if it's just short distances for short trips, to go and do things at the shops or to go to appointments or something like that. Then if we can do things like that to encourage greater uptake of that as a transport option, then I think that would be a positive moving forward. So thank you very much to everyone for their contributions. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. Just everybody highlighted some really fantastic points. It's a really important strategy, and I hope that maybe in a year we can have a little review of it and to see how some of the actions have gone. I know that's not part of the recommendation, but that would be really wonderful to get an update to keep it front and centre for these really important issues for our community. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'm now going to put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 68, sale of council land policy, with a recommendation on the following page. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just an update of this sale of land policy, noting in the discussion there have been no significant issues identified with the policy to change. They've been checked for compliance and legislation alignment, and it's been formatted for the current approved template. I've had a read of the policy, and I am happy to approve as in the report.
Thank you. Further discussion, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. So I support the policy, and I recognise the need to have a policy when it does come to the hopefully rare and unusual circumstance where we do have land that is surplus to council's needs and effective and efficient management of our resources. I wanted to highlight the policy detail that I think is the most critical aspect, that all of this has to be done in a very transparent way that it maintains consistency, procedural fairness and public interest. For me, the sale of council assets is always and should always and everywhere be an absolute last resort, and it should be done with a very clear and defined justification and rationale behind it, where on a cost-benefit analysis we can see clear benefits as a result of selling council land. So I kind of intimated that in my question earlier in this meeting, where I basically said the value of land is finite, and as a result of that, by holding on to it, that's we are being stewards for future generations of Kingborough residents who are able to avail themselves of the benefit of that land. So there are, and I acknowledge, some circumstances in which it is prudent for council to sell council land, but I think it's on the rare and exceptional occasion rather than a quick sugar hit, as I fear that in the past it has been. So that's why I wanted to highlight what I consider to be safeguards in this policy, which and we can see them at 5, the procedure policy detail. The idea that council land that could potentially be considered for sale may either be identified by the public or by way of council's own assessment processes, and identified land will be internally assessed with consideration of the following. These are critical points: road reserves and casements to ensure that the land is not required for future widening or footpath construction and the like, walkways and laneways to ascertain if the land has any current or future value for a pedestrian thoroughfare, public open space and natural area reserves. This is a particular interest of mine, to make sure that we do have urban wildlife corridors, that we have biodiversity conservation in mind when we do make assessments about whether or not council land should be offered up to the market, to the private market, and public recreation to assess the potential of the land for public recreation through referral to council's recreation officer. And finally, undesignated land, assessment against council's public open space strategy for its potential to meet future council or community needs. And that, and this is with particular reference to our experiences on Bruny Island, that last line about public open space strategy for its potential to meet future council or community needs, that to me is a great and important catch-all, where we do need to be thinking longer than just the next election cycle, and I know that we are. We need to be thinking very long term. We are stewards of these assets for, you know, 50, 100, 200 years, and we therefore need to think long term as the population increases to have these sanctuaries and havens for biodiversity and human interaction and health and well-being. To maintain those requires council to maintain its own assets. So once again, I just want to reiterate, the sale of council land should never be a short-term sugar fix or a sugar hit. It should only ever be in pursuit of effective and efficient use of resources and with the long-term vision for community health and well-being and the health and well-being of our natural areas and environment at the heart of everything we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. It's a great policy in many ways, and I have, again, some questions that I'd like to throw to the relevant council officers on how much detail do you put in versus how much do you handle elsewhere, and should it be handled elsewhere? The first is around financial principles and valuation guidance, a little bit touched on by what Councillor Cordova said. So the policy obviously requires valuation before sale, but it doesn't define how much of a discount is reasonable, nor how public benefit is to be quantified. For example, I recall that we copped some criticism from some in the community when we decided to gift the AFL High Performance Centre land to the AFL because we felt it had a greater community good, but that was a subjective assessment, which I totally agree with and back even now. And I'm wondering if a sort of a public benefit scoring matrix or a weighted assessment framework, ironically I actually have an example of one that's used, should be in this policy
Sorry.
Could I get an opinion from someone on that?
Dr. Stevenson, who may not have a mic. Oh, yes, it's working.
Through you, Mayor. My personal preference is that sits outside the policy because it gives flexibility to take on board contemporary practices, but remembering that ultimately this is a decision of the absolute majority of council, so it has to be formally considered by council. I think it would be reasonable to expect that a report did outline how it was assessed, and that could include, for example, a benefits matrix or something along those lines.
Because I've noticed, if I may, Mayor, I've noticed that in the past we've never received anything quite like that in the reports we've gotten. Not trying to criticise, but always, you know, improve. The next one I have is what's not included is probably there's no overarching framework identifying when or why land should be reviewed for sale. For example, what is our policy about always reviewing the land that we have for sale and saying we don't need this sliver of land at the end of Maranoa Road that a particular organisation might want to use for their purposes. Why don't we approach them and give it to them for the greater good, see if they're interested, or sell it to them? Do we have some sort of a proactive... I don't see a mention of that in this policy, being a bit more proactive about the disposal of land. It tends to be ad hoc when someone asks for it or needs it. Is that... Could I get an opinion on that?
Yeah, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. I guess the starting point would be to have the view that all council owned land is valuable and has a purpose. We do have our open space strategy, and as part of that strategy, there was identification and assessment of every parcel of council-owned land, and that strategy is subject to review. So generally speaking, we don't maintain an active list of parcels of land that we may sell, and we're not actively looking for parcels of land that we might sell. As I said at the start, we take the view that all of our land holdings do have a purpose and a value. However, there are instances, and they are largely come from approaches from the community as to individual parcels of land that the community identify a potential use that has a community benefit, and it's generally that is the time when we would review. Other than that, our public open space strategy, that is reviewed periodically, provides that mechanism for review of all our land holdings.
Thank you.
Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I think that's possibly a fair approach, given that we don't have huge parcels of land and aren't this sweeping large LGA that has land everywhere like they do on the mainland. But look, I appreciate you allowing me to put this in there, and if the author of the report feels that maybe we could tweak it to add some of these thoughts in there, it might be worth talking about. The other one is about public consultation thresholds. So currently the policy states that public consultation must occur, but there's no differentiation based on the land type. For example, its value, its sale size. So, for example, picture a selling a... Picture selling a well-used local park and a disused industrial block. It currently triggers, unless I'm mistaken, the same consultation process. I'm wondering whether or not we should tweak the wording so that we can manage expectation from the public. Look, there are certain things that, certain land we may own that should trigger consultation, but let's be real, we shouldn't be consulting on every jolly thought that pops in our head or every operational need we have. And I'm wondering whether or not something could or should be added in there to differentiate the value.
Mr. Smee or Dr. Stevenson?
Through you, Mayor, the vast majority of our land holdings is what is classified as public land, so we have no option under the Local Government Act but to go through that consultation process. We do have some land holdings that are not classified as public land, so they are minimal, and I think from the viewpoint of transparency, we would still want to go through that same process where there is a discrete title of land that potentially could be sold. I consider that public consultation process is equally as valid as it is to public land.
Councillor Ntoli.
Okay, I appreciate the answers to those questions. My view is that if we... Look, I get that we don't probably own any commercial land apart from the land that we currently use and have our operations on, so I can't see us wanting to get rid of that. I just think it would be good to just sort of flag that public consultation is valid, but probably not in every single context, and it's just creating the expectation in the minds of the community. I recall again that the public consultation, we were criticised that we didn't publicly consult the gifting of the AFL land, which was on our sports precinct. We consulted with stakeholders, but we didn't throw it out there to the community, and we were criticised for that.
Hang on, sorry, can the CEO just respond to that?
Yes.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, can I just clarify that we did publicly consult on the disposal of the land for the AFL High Performance Centre.
And how can you remind me about what mechanism we used for the consultation?
Sorry, can I... Thank you to my colleague to my left. I'm talking about the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre. The intent would be that we would follow the same process for the AFL High Performance Centre. Sorry to correct myself.
Right, okay. Yeah, okay, well, I'll leave it at that, but look, I appreciate the strategy, and I'm just trying to sort of throw in some thoughts in there about how specific maybe we could or should be on some of those issues. And I appreciate the author well, and the author of the changes and her intellectual capacity to handle all these things, and I know that she enjoys a good little intellectual discussion on these matters, so I appreciate her patience.
She's only here for another 4 days. Thank you. Is there further discussion? Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to item 15.4, Legat General Management Committee vacancy. I'm going to hand the chair to the Deputy Mayor as this item is likely to impact me.
Thank you. So I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Move Councillor Street. Seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Street.
So I move that Council nominate Councillor Reet for the position of General Management Committee.
Okay.
Well, I think probably the motion is that I'm moving is that Council nominate Councillor Reet for the position of General Management Committee, and then Councillor Midgley has seconded that. Or provided that you're happy to second that motion, Councillor Mitchell.
Are there further contributions, Councillor Antoli, or Councillor Street? Did you want to go first?
Look, I was simply going to say in moving the motion that Councillor Reed has served one term on the General Management Committee. She's the Vice President of Legat as elected by her peers. I think she's done an excellent job in that position. Would love to see her continue on the General Management Committee. Would love to see her continue as Vice President, her colleagues willing. And I think she deserves Council's full support.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I was basically going to say the same thing, and I just hope that she remembers us when that she's rich and famous there as Il Presidente of LGAT. But I think she has the background, the capacity, the intellectual and character and the emotional intelligence to do us proud. And I really hope that she gets it, in my view. But let's hope that she doesn't forget us when she's up there on high.
Thank you. Further contributions, Councillor Reed.
Oh, thank you for the confidence and for the nomination. We will be the process for this. I'm very happy to accept that nomination. I've enjoyed the opportunity to be on GMC of LGAT, but also particularly as Vice President, because that's meant that I've been involved at a greater level than I otherwise would have been. And it's been very interesting times with all the different legislation that has been within the local government arena for a while. So the process moving forward here is that we will be advising the Electoral Commission of this nomination, as other councils have done. They're due by Wednesday, and then there will be ballot papers issued. So all 12 councils from the southern region, because I'll be going forward as the nominee from a larger council in the southern region, and then all 12 councils in the region vote on the on who their preferred candidate is. So there's no guarantees, but hopefully I can get a second term. So thank you very much for that endorsement.
Are there further contributions? Councillor Street, would you like to sum up? So I'll put the motion that Council nominate Councillor Reet for the position of General Management Committee. All those in... it was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried unanimously.
I didn't vote. Can you note me as abstaining? It feels a bit weird to be voting for myself for that, just from a procedural point of view. Thank you. Thank you very much, Deputy Mayor. Takes us to item 15.5, which is the Copping Refuse Disposal Site Joint Authority approval of rule changes, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. So the purpose of the report is to seek Council's approval for the certified amendments to the Copping Refuse Disposal Site Joint Authority rules. This is largely procedural in nature in the sense that a summary of the proposed changes has already been considered by Council at its meeting on the 1st of July 2024, and as a result of the... there's statutory requirements that involve a little bit of back and forth between each of the councils that are owners, and therefore we actually have already looked at this, and this is now the next step of the process. Basically, the authority approved back in May of last year by special resolution its intention to amend the rules, and essentially the change is to make a separation of the roles of authority secretary and the board secretary of Southern Waste Solutions, and that's largely to improve the operational efficiency of the organisation. So, as I say, largely procedural in nature. I should note that I'm Council's representative on that. And so in my discussions around that authority table, it's, as I say, largely procedural in nature, but it will help improve the efficiency of the organisation. So I strongly recommend that we keep this thing moving. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further discussions? No, I will put the recommendation moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to item 15.6, expressions of interest, King's Quarter, with a recommendation on page 129. I'm looking for a mover. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to seek approval to run an expression of interest process for the use of the commercial cafe area at the Kingborough Community Hub, which has recently been vacated. The original intended use of the premises was indeed for a commercial cafe. So I guess we'll just have to see what sorts of interest comes back to us. I think a cafe would be fantastic there. I know, having spent many hours at that playground, the wonderful parkland there with my kids, when the cafe was operating there, we indeed bought many chips and ice creams. So I think that type of use would continue to be fantastic. If it was a larger cafe, it's got those beautiful views up to the mountain, which are really, really lovely. The parklands are looking great over there at the moment. All the trees are growing up and the landscaping is looking really fantastic. So I think activating that space as a commercial cafe would be brilliant. I know that there has occasionally been talk of a social enterprise going into there. A Hamlet-style cafe would indeed be absolutely wonderful. I guess we just have to see what sort of interest comes back. But happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you very much. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I'm happy to support the recommendation as well. The park run on a Saturday is definitely, hoping that something happens there, and there's been talk of a coffee van and that sort of a thing for people to congregate after they've run their 5 kilometres or walked. I really support a social enterprise, and I'm wondering, I guess, with the EOI, how are we advertising that, and are we at all reaching out to any NGOs or Hamlet or any discussions that we've had in regards to sort of looking that way?
Dr. Stevenson.
So at this stage, we're just seeking your agreement to progress to developing the EOI. So the intent would be to keep it fairly wide in its potential. There is no intent meant through this paper that we would be establishing a social enterprise, so it would be more them on a semi-commercial basis. So if there's one up and ready to go, they can express an interest. So I know that in the past there's been suggestion that council become the... But that's not the intent. We don't have the resourcing for that. So the idea will be to keep an EOI that allows for diversity of application to be considered, to be received, not really closing our mind to anything, because we know some things have not worked well. Last time we didn't get any successful applications. So.
Thank you. I guess I was wondering if we're going to be doing like more than just advertising in the paper for an EOI, if we really sort of wanted to scope that more, social enterprise type mode.
Dr. Stevenson.
I feel like it's very hard for me to commit other people when I'm not going to be here.
But hey, have a go at it.
I think it would be usual to try and use some of our networks to promote the EOI, but not necessarily invite, if that makes sense. So it'd be more about raising awareness that we're going through the process.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up? Okay, thank you. I will put the recommendation then, moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to 15.7 on page 130, financial report for March 2025 with a recommendation on page 132. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Antoli. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So we have the financial reports March 2025. The year-to-date result is 1.42 favourable to budget, and our forecast end of financial year position is that we'll be around that same amount of 1.4. The initial full year budgeted underlying loss of 2.935 has been reduced to a forecast underlying loss of 1.535, so it's nearly halved, which is great. Of the 1.4 improvement, $750,000 relates to recurrent savings, so that will be favourable for impacting future years' budgets, which is important coming into the 25-26 budget development. Of the recurrent savings, the changes from last month to this month, it's gone from 650 recurrent to 750 recurrent. Some of that's from the Kingborough gym user fees increasing from 100,000 forecast to 150,000 forecast. And the other one is income on overdue rates notices of 50,000, which leads to one of my questions there. So it talks about in the discussion section of page 131 against other income, the report mentions... Other income is $104,000 over budget, mainly due to interest on overdue rates balances. An adjustment of $50,000 has been made to the forecast to reflect this. It should be noted this is a budgeting issue and not indicative of a decline in rates collections. So my question here is, just to confirm, is this telling us that the number of overdue rates we're seeing hasn't increased from previous years, and it's just that the budgeted dollar amount against this item was undercooked and not reflective of how much we've collected previous years?
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I'm happy to report that the budget line was undercooked, and it's not indicative of a decline in our rates collections or anything of that nature.
Excellent. And just a follow-up question,
Councillor Bain.
The question is around in 4.3 in the report, it talks about the $800,000 contribution towards the wetlands project from a developer. And I guess my question here is, given that this work was completed and paid for some time ago, does that $800,000 simply become part of our overall closing balance and we use that for future works or paying down debt or whatever the council determines?
Mr. Spinks.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. So that's correct, how you've summarised it. It's, we don't have any intent, and I don't believe there's any sort of pre-existing commitment to sort of use this as some kind of windfall gain to provide extra allocation towards the capital works program this year or anything. So it will sort of just go into cash reserves to fund future requirements, whatever they may be.
Excellent.
Councillor Bang.
Thank you. And just a final question. Noticed on page 170 we're starting to see some expenses against the AFL High Performance Centre. And so just to confirm, these expenses will be recouping the costs from state growth, is that correct?
That is correct.
Excellent.
That's very all my questions. Vehement, yes.
Yes, good to know. Thank you.
Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. And compliments to the accounting chef for the way he's cooked this budget. Well done. It's good to see some improvements. It's always alarming when the word cook and budgets are thrown in together from the accountant.
Let's not talk about cooking
the books. Exactly. Let's reword that.
Can you just retract that? Yeah.
But it's hard to make light of dry numbers sometimes. I would like to just bring up the small typo there at 5.2 that's probably been noticed already, that it talks about a $1 million improvement. It's actually 1.4. That probably should be amended because it undercooks the good work you did.
Understates,
I know, but I had to use that word instead. It's more funny, at least to me. With regards to the $750,000 recurrent savings, can you list what some of those items are, examples of those savings?
It's through you, Mayor. So on page 139 of the report, we list what the forecast revisions have been year to date. Some of those are going to be timing issues only and relate to the current year only. Some of those are sort of more ongoing. So the ongoing ones, $100,000 for rates, $150,000 increase in membership income for the sports centre, the depreciation adjustment, and the item we've just spoken about, which is the interest on outstanding rates.
Great. And well done to the team. It's good to see this turnaround after some of the financial discussions from last year. Well done.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova, I had next, and then it'll be Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Two quick questions. The first one is about the tree preservation contribution. I was just interested to know what that related to. There was one particularly large one, and then so I'm just looking at the contributions heading on page 131. And then the second question, if I may, is around land tax. Did you want to deal with them one at a time, or should I ask the question about
one
land
at a time
tax?
Would be super, yeah. Mr. Spinks, thank you.
Yeah, one tree preservation contribution of 66.
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor, unless any of my colleagues can help me on that particular issue, I might have to take that one on notice as to the specific details of that.
No worries, thank you.
Looks like we're taking it on notice.
Sure thing. Thank you, Mayor. Through you, my second question is around expenditure. Other expenses are $79,000 favourable to budget. This is mainly due to land tax and pension and remission costs, but both are timing variances. So I understand the pension and remission aspect, but I'm intrigued by the land tax element. I thought that in most circumstances we're exempt from land tax. So what land tax are we exposed to?
Through you, Mayor. No.
Microphone. Sorry.
Sorry, Mayor. So we're not exempt from land tax. So the variance there is just simply a timing issue. They're paid, I think, in 3 or 4 instalments during the course of the year. So it's just a timing issue.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, echo. It's great news moving forward what our budget numbers are right now. So I'm sure leading into our budget and deliberations, we'll have some hopefully positive things and outcomes ahead. I also had a question about the High Performance Centre, but it's good to note that that will be repaid, and that's under the engineering operating income expenses. And I also noted the active transport study on that same page, 41, is that 41 on everyone else's? Just noted that study seemed to be a bit more than, with the variance there being 99,000. I'm just wondering, was that the integrated transport study, what the active transport study is?
Mr. Spinks.
Yeah, look, again, Mayor, unless Mr. Smee or someone can assist me there, I'll take that one on notice.
Thank you. We'll take that on notice.
Great, thank you.
Any further discussion? Mr. Spinks?
Yeah, Mayor, can I just add one further comment? So whilst the year-to-date position is looking very good this month, I do need to just alert Council to the fact that in next month's report, we'll more than likely be making a fairly significant unfavourable adjustment. And that relates to a line item called asset write-offs. So in the course of the Capital Works program, it's inevitable sometimes that we have to write off the value of existing assets when we do replacement works. And the asset management team are just sort of working through that at the moment with the year-to-date figure. That's likely to be a fairly significant number. So whilst it's looking good this month, I suspect that it'll be a fairly major turnaround for next month.
Thank you. Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up? No? I'll put the recommendation now, then moved by Councillor Bain and seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to 15.8, appendices. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Any questions on the appendices? No? Thank you. I'll put the motion then moved by the Deputy Mayor and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. I will now, since the next notice of motion is one that I am moving, I'll hand the chair to the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So we are considering a notice of motion submitted by Councillor Reet. It'll be moved by Councillor Reet. I'm just looking for a seconder, please. Councillor Antoli, Councillor Reet.
Thank you very much. Look, I've brought this notice of motion today, and that is in relation to the Lift the Tone campaign, which has been produced by the Local Government Association. As Vice President of the Association, I was asked to launch this campaign last month, and I have to say that I did hesitate to be the face of the campaign because I had a feeling that when we start to talk about the often abuse that elected representatives receive, when we talk about the impact that that has on our own health and well-being, there can be quite negative responses to the community as a result of that. So a few years ago, I remember saying something on radio about, you know, that it wasn't fair that elected representatives were being targeted by some people in the community. And sure enough, there was the inevitable comments that I received very quickly after that. Well, if you can't cop the heat, get out of the kitchen and stuff like that. And so I did think about whether I wanted to be the one who went out and promoted this. And sure enough, it took less than 24 hours for me to get the first email from somebody to say to me, there you are whining about copping abuse when you're making the decisions that you're making. So that kind of says to me that we're right on the money in terms of trying to say to the community what we want to do through this campaign is not impact democracy in any way, not stop people from having their say. We want to hear from members of the community. But as elected representatives, all of our councillors right around the state deserve to be treated with respect. Now, last week we had our workshop on psychosocial safety, and it was really interesting that we heard the great analogy that we were given, and that was you can debate something from two totally different perspectives, and you can actually do it still with respect and with strong arguments on either side. And the example we were given is that when lawyers go to court and they argue, either the prosecution or the defence barrister, they argue passionately for their respective cases, but they do it within a set of guidelines that says we will do it respectfully, because if they don't, the judge is going to come down on them. We don't have that sort of framework. Now, I think that we are very lucky here in Kingborough that I think to a certain degree the interactions that we have in the community are far more respectful than occurs in some other councils. The reason that Legat did this campaign was that councillors from, particularly from small communities, were coming to meetings and saying, I can't walk down the street without being abused. I can't go to the supermarket without being yelled at. I've had people threaten me in front of my children when I go to the beach with my children. This is the sort of examples that we've been given. There have been counsellors who have been followed in cars, you know, with members of the community following them in their car, intimidating, abusive and bullying behaviour that is taking place. So Legat did a survey, and the survey showed that 80% of the counsellors who responded to that had been subjected to some form of abuse, bullying or intimidation by members of the community. And that is a really high statistic. And 40% of those people said that one of the main reasons they may not run again as counsellors is because the impact of that behaviour by on them and on their families. So I think that we have to set the tone in the way that we behave around the counsellors. And I think that we do that. And I think that we have really healthy discussions around here. And I'm very grateful that we have members who can do that in a very civil way. And even if we are poles apart in our approach to a particular issue, I think we always manage to do that respectfully. But if you do look at some of the stuff that occurs, and I will highlight social media as being a hugely distressing thing. We had a psychologist who came to the launch with us, and she talked about the fact that when somebody makes a particularly hurtful or intimidating comment on social media, it's easy to do because they don't, you know, they're the keyboard warriors. But also, the reason it's so easy to do is when you press enter or send on those comments, you can't see the impact that it has on the people who then read those comments, that the ones that that comment is directed at. And so it's so much easier to do it when you can't see the hurt and distress that it causes. Because a lot of those comments on social media, people probably wouldn't say it to your face. But there's I guess there's a safety that they feel in being able to express themselves through those channels. We have round tables of mayors, and the deputy mayors have the same every few months at one of our meetings. And that's sort of our opportunity to talk confidentially in a group about what's happening in our areas. And one thing that's increased substantially over the last 3 years is the number of my colleagues who hold mayoral positions who are telling stories of absolutely vile behaviour by members of the community directed at them. And it is, you know, you can see the impact that it has on them and their loved ones. So I feel very passionate about this. And I feel that as a council who does operate in a really respectful way towards each other, that we are well placed to endorse this motion and to say to other people in the community, we're not going to tolerate this sort of behaviour. So LGAT has released a toolkit of resources that is available for all councillors to use if you want to put guidelines on your social media pages, and, you know, having the little byline of under your signature block of lift the tone and that sort of thing. So I hope that everybody will, and we're also saying to people, sign up for the pledge, which is, you know, we'd like the community to say, I'm not going to stand by and watch this sort of abuse as well. So thank you for allowing me on my soapbox for a moment. But as I said, I think this is an important issue. We want to make sure that when it comes around to the next elections at the end of next year, that people are encouraged to stand. And they're only going to stand for public office at any level if there is a better environment in which to operate and to do your job. Because, quite frankly, in some parts of the state, with the abuse that people cop, the job description to stand as a councillor isn't a great one if you think you have to tolerate the sort of behaviour that some do. So thank you.
Thank you. Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you to Mayor Reid for putting this forward, and it was actually quite touching to hear those stories. I'm actually reminded, Mayor, of two stories. I have a friend who was a Deputy Mayor of a council in Tasmania and decided to withdraw re-election, which was a real shame because she was very active in the community running a not-for-profit. And it had to do with abuse, and she told me that she couldn't take it anymore. And the straw that broke her back was that some unhinged male in the community decided that he would stalk her and follow her home. He's very fortunate the husband didn't catch him on the spot. He's a huge man, plays AFL. But it broke the back for her, and it almost brought me to tears when she actually told me once when I bumped into her in the car at council one day. And even today I actually had a member of the community complaining to me about a colleague around this table saying very nasty things about things to do with their past. And I'm really glad that I stood up to that person and defended my colleague. And it's sort of a bit of a reminder that we've all got to pitch in together. I love a fair debate. I sort of revel in it. I think most of you know that I really enjoy the proper, respectful debate. I like, and that example of the lawyers is superb. They are paid to passionately argue their client's position, and but they have to do within a framework. And we've lost that capacity in this nation. It sort of used to be a craft from years past, even in politics, but it's gotten gutter snipe in recent years. And so I'm really happy to back this. And I do want to reiterate what you've shared, that the tone here is, I think, uncommonly respectful, because there are definitely some councils out there that I wouldn't be able to go to work the way they carry on towards each other. So, I don't know, what are we planning on doing something about this from a council promotion point of view? What is the connection between this program and the way we as a council are going to in any way, shape or form promote it? Maybe someone could inform me on that.
Councillor Reid.
Allowed to answer that as the mover of the motion. Look, certainly the toolkit of resources that we've been provided by ELGAD as part of this, I would hope that we use that and through our own social media channels and put rules on the page, because I think that's something that we, you know, if we're not having respectful debate on our own social media pages, whether it be councils themselves or our individual ones, I think then people should expect that they can no longer be part of that page if they breach the rules. So in order to do that, you need to make it very clear. So I'd like to see that. I'd encourage all councillors to do that on their social media pages as well. I think one of the difficulties is when it starts to get out of that realm and you have our posts reshared on community pages where we don't have the ability to remove comments that are directed, I will say, not only at us but also at our staff who don't deserve them as well, which is always distressing. So, you know, part of this, and we've said it during the debate, is that some of this stuff is not just happening towards us as elected representatives but also to the council staff, and that's very distressing for them as well. But certainly I would hope that we use those tools that we have available to us to continue to spread the word to our community.
Thank you.
Further contributions? Anyone? Councillor Dean.
I think you kind of wholly endorse this. I think the only thing I was going to ask you, just briefly mentioned it there, was around the extension towards staff. So is it including that part, and what is LEGAT, if so, you know, trying to do around the education piece on, you know, how we interact with staff, whether it's a positive or negative experience, how we handle that as a council?
So this campaign, obviously, because it's been done by the Local Government Association, is predominantly about the way members of the community interact with council. We have tried to bring the message to the community about respectful interactions with our staff as well, because I know that over the last 18 months in particular, when there have been issues that have been concerning members of the community, that there have been staff members, individual ones who have been targeted, who have been named on social media. They see all that, and that's really, really stressful. And sometimes some of the behaviour of members of the community who come into the office and speak to staff is quite unacceptable. So there has also been work done at the Legat level about a unreasonable how to deal with unreasonable customers, I think is the title of it, and there will be a paper coming to coming to councillors for endorsement soon about a policy to, which sets out if there is a member of the community who is, you know, harassing, bullying, intimidating, you know, members of staff, that we then have the capacity and the tools to be able to deal with that as well. Because everybody deserves to be safe in the jobs that they do. Unfortunately, that isn't how it's always panning out. And so we do need to make sure we've got policies that cover that as well.
Further contributions? For my own contribution, yes, it's always surprising to me when I try and make a really, really big effort to be positive on social media and put out a post saying something about some amazing things that council have done. Even when you're really, really trying to be positive, you still get that negativity coming in. It's so appalling. So I wholeheartedly support this motion as well. If there are no further contributions, I will put the motion. It is up there on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Reet. It was seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against. Motion is carried unanimously.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We are now on page 190, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. We're looking at confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and upgrade of the audiovisual system within council chambers, which clearly from the way the microphones have been working this evening or not working is a much needed discussion. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried. Thank you very much to those who have been in attendance this evening and also to those watching along at home on YouTube. In accordance with Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So open session of council adjourned at 7 p.m. Thank you and good evening.